The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio.
Hello, Happy New Year. Welcome to the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan, and this week's edition is the January Roundtable. We're at Guilt-Free Studios, which I don't advertise enough, so I'm going to say, whenever I need a studio in Soho, London, I always come to Guilt-Free on Dean Street. And very nice people they are too. But we're basically here today to have our normal chinwag, which we do every month, about just what's going on in radio and audio. The panel is assembled and I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
I'm Brett Spencer. I'm Digital Content Director for Bauer Radio.
I'm Ian McIntosh. I'm Chief Executive of Muddy Knees Media.
Hello there. Thanks for the invite, Trevor. I'm Gene Bean Baxter, recently moved back home to Britain after many years as a radio presenter in America.
Now, you are a legend in Los Angeles, Gene, and you shouldn't underplay that. Anybody who's been there in the last, 30 years you were on the air,
yes,
will know K-Rock and the legendary Kevin and Bean show. You were half of it, even though you were not always literally in LA. What on earth, but briefly, has brought you to England?
I did the show for 30 years. It was half my life. I thought, hey, it's time to move home. There's always a pull from where you're from. And I hadn't lived in London for a long time. I feel like I'd done about as much as I could do on the show that I was on. And I was looking for some new challenges. Plus, my wife is very excited about being able to go to Paris every weekend.
Right. Okay. And are you over here basically as one of these immigrants looking for work?
I am a British citizen, so I don't think I count for that. But yes, I'm very much looking for work. And that was part of the equation when I made the decision to leave America to come back home is, who's going to give an old man with an accent like this a shot? So I'm at this point, I haven't been beaten down. I haven't heard a lot of no's yet. So I'm still going to be optimistic that I will find work. But I love radio and I am very excited about being on British radio.
What is the view, do you think, in America about British radio? You know, when you told your friends and colleagues that you were going to come over here, what was their attitude?
America doesn't think about Britain and doesn't think about anyone else in the world. And that's a fact. They really don't care what's going on. America believes it is an exceptional nation and their entertainment industry is the only one that matters. So when the Golden Globes come along and a Korean film in Korean wins the best picture, there are a lot of Americans who don't think that's possible or that's right or why did that happen or who are these people and I don't like them. That's the American attitude. So I don't think they think about British media at all.
And what did you think when you were working in America from your perspective about British radio? Because I think those of us who lived and worked over here for some years, we tend to be inculcated with this thing about, oh, well, British media, British radio, of course, it's the best in the world. Is that how it looks to you?
I will say that I think that America and Britain are, look, we're all limited by the fact that we, for the most part, only speak English. So there may be phenomenal radio being done in Africa that we just haven't heard or don't understand. But I think British and American radio are the best that I've heard. I think largely in England because of the BBC, though. I think those networks, those channels are the ones that are making the most exceptional radio. Without the BBC, I don't think that the commercial sector in Britain is as far advanced as it is in America.
Brett, you listen to a lot of American podcasts and radio and European radio as well. Where do you think we sit in the great kind of panoply?
I think one of the reasons that podcasting has done so well in the US is because there isn't this great history of speech radio in America outside of NPR. So they're being exposed for the first time, perhaps, to a wealth of speech content and quality speech content they've not had before. I think we like to think we've got the best radio in the world. I suspect every country in the world probably thinks they've got the best radio in the world. I think we've got probably the best public service broadcaster in the world. And America doesn't necessarily have a public service broadcaster that carries the sort of weight that the BBC does. And that's why the BBC is held in high regard here and also in the US. And I know when I've been in the US, the BBC is the immediate thing people want to talk to me about when I mention the word radio. One of the things I'm interested in, though, which you touched on there, Trevor, about not always being in LA, I know for a lot of the time when you were doing your show in Los Angeles, you were actually in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And there's very much a live debate here at the moment with consolidation in the radio industry about how important it is or not to be broadcasting from the area you're in. What's your take on that as somebody who's an LA breakfast show from Seattle for so long?
What was different about my experience versus a lot of other shows, especially in Britain that are going national, is I had lived in Los Angeles for 10 years. I was very familiar with the market. I knew the intersections. I knew the brands. I knew the people. So it wasn't that much of a transition when I moved to Seattle. And then the last 4 years, I lived in New Orleans, Louisiana, and did it from there because I always was so familiar with the marketplace. It would have been very different if I was doing a breakfast show from New Orleans to Detroit, a city I've never lived in. I think that would not have been nearly as effective.
Because there is a view, isn't there, that you can do particularly commercial music radio from literally anywhere, although there are people who say, no, I don't like it because it's coming from 10 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult circle to square, I guess, that, isn't it? Ian, you've made a lot of sport programming over the years. What's your view of the way that we do sport compared to the Americans?
I think, as with everything, it's always about authenticity. One of the things that we keep getting asked by people is when we're going to do an NFL show. The short answer being never, because why would you want to know what a load of pasty guys staying up at night on a Sunday would think about the NFL? You want to listen to Bill Simmons.
Could download Absolute's new NFL podcast.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Well, the podcasts are available.
So the Totally Football Show is, as always, we see in the audience that there's about 40% of the audience is from outside the UK. They're tapping into, you know, that authenticity of people being at the game. And in terms of the way it's delivered, I think certainly from our point of view, we're a little more wry, maybe a little more deadpan. But, you know, there are a number of American outlets which are in that direction as well, particularly from the coastal areas. I think there's certainly less bombast with our podcasts.
Do you think that when you listen to particularly British coverage of the Premier League, that it's just a bit too independent, a bit too impartial, that you'd quite like sometimes on broadcast commentary to have the feel that you get from the Spurs show or the Arse blog or, you know, one of those, you know, committed fan podcasts?
Speaking on a personal basis, no. I like having the sort of certainty and stability of having something coming from the middle in terms of, you know, the commentary on the game. I can go elsewhere for my opinion and partisanship. And to be honest, I've never been a huge fan of partisanship anyway. I like a certain sort of verification from experts. I'm very much the anti-Michael Gove. I have a lot of time for experts. So it's never been something there. But also, if that was mainstream, then all of those partisan sites would get sidelined quite quickly.
You were saying before we came in here, Brett, how weird it is that you can't find streamed commentary from Premier League matches on British radio.
It was driving me mad over Christmas, and I don't approach this from a position of naivety. I was at Five Live for 6 years, and before that I was with the company that built the websites that hosted all the official Football League commentary. But it does seem bizarre in an age where the Premier League is sort of trying to keep up with technology, introducing VAR, which is a whole different conversation, that you still can't stream Premier League football on the radio. And over Christmas I was listening to Five Live and Talk Sport and BBC London and BBC Three Counties, and every time I tried to listen to a game, there was that blanking message, which hasn't changed in about 10 years. And I was walking around the house plugging and unplugging a DAB radio to keep listening to a game.
How does that work, Gene, in the US? You know, if you're in New Orleans and the Saints are playing Seattle, can mm-hmm. you hear that?
It's very restrictive as well. The flagship radio stations of those respective football teams block the broadcast. My backup was I had Sirius XM satellite radio, which has a deal with the NFL, so that would be where I'd go to if I were traveling and wanted to hear the game.
And in terms of all the sports, is mm-hmm. that how that works?
Yes. Yes. I mean, the NFL does offer its own app with streaming, and the MLB does as well, and the NBA does as well. But yeah, you're jumping through hoops if you want to stream a game in the US as well.
And we're talking at a time now where we're being encouraged to listen to as many different devices and smart speakers as possible. The BBC are encouraging us to listen to BBC Sound. And all of the devices that we're being migrated to are devices on which you can't listen to live football.
Brett Spencer is here from Bauer. We've got Muddy Knees Media, Ian McIntosh, and we've got the man banging the table in a very unprofessional way.
I think that's my chair. I'm not touching the table. I think it's my chair.
It's just caught on the piano.
That's what it is.
Caught on the piano. That's the excuse.
Okay, I've
We're
moved
all
now.
Looking for.
My apologies. Am I being deported? Is that enough of a defense to throw me out of the country?
I think we're creating a hostile environment for you right now. Let's just move on and talk about what Radio 1 were up to over Christmas. An astonishing decision I can't imagine being made when I used to work there, where somebody obviously went along and said, look, everybody's on holiday or wants to be on holiday over Christmas. Let's just rip up the schedules and put on a load of people who have never been heard on Radio 1 before. a very creative idea or madness, Brett? What do you think?
I think it's a fantastic idea, and we shouldn't underestimate the amount of work something like that takes in terms of an audition process, finding the right people, finding the right combination of people, making sure there's the right levels of representation and diversity, and also making sure they're comfortable in a Radio 1 studio and able to broadcast in that environment. That's a huge amount of production and work by people at Radio 1. But as we were just talking about, fantastic that we've got a public service broadcaster that has the time and the resource and the space and the people to be able to do that.
Would that happen in America, do you think?
I don't. And if any of us had the opportunity to present a Radio 1 show over Christmas, we would literally poop ourselves. We would be so terrified. It was amazing how comfortable some of these 19, 20, 25-year-olds sounded on the radio, like they'd been doing it their whole lives. That was the number one thing that I noticed with what I listened to, which was, it didn't seem like in some cases there was that much difference between the amateurs and the professionals. I think I'd be nervous if I were making a lot of money as a professional on Radio 1.
And it wasn't so long ago that we had a conversation on this very program about, do you have to have a TV profile and a million social media followers in order to get on the radio now? So to have this conversation is very refreshing.
I thought what was fascinating for me was the parallels with that and what happened in the 90s with Radio 1. As a teenager in the 1990s, Radio 1 didn't reflect what I was after, and that station was supposed to be for teenagers. It was a 1970s station. It was smashy and nicey. And then, of course, with your good self and Matthew Bannister coming in, ripping it all up, bringing in things that actually did reflect what I thought the world was. Now we're 20, 30 years on from that, and the idea of bringing in people who are so diverse and so individual, and people with YouTube backgrounds and up and coming, that reflects the way that I think young people see the world now. They don't see the same sort of barriers. They don't see the 5 years of hospital radio. They don't see any of that. They want the personality-driven, but real personality-driven, diverse personality-driven world. I thought it was a very, very brave thing to do, and I have to echo your statements about that's what the BBC should be doing.
And it's fantastic that, you know, that is a there is still a route to air for people coming from a background that isn't, you know, without a big agent or without TV. And the relationship between all the broadcasters and the Student Radio Association is fantastic, and they do great work. And Jay Lawrence, who has just started on Evenings and Absolute, has come through the SRA as well. So, you know, it's all good.
Last time I was sitting in this room, we were talking about the Audio Production Awards in the December roundtable, and we were saying what a cool and refreshing thing it was, because there was a lot of diverse people winning awards and so on. And it felt as though we were on the cusp of a new golden age of radio. And we've had all these new stations open. We've got these new voices on Radio 1. Does it feel to all of us as though, you know, the floodgates are open and all is to play for?
I think it was interesting. I was a judge on the APAs, and it was interesting how more often than not, the people that we were nominating or that were entering were people who had never worked for a broadcaster. They worked for a production company, or they were podcasting themselves, or they were a freelance producer. And it doesn't seem to be the case now, well, it isn't the case now, that the aim is to go and work for a broadcaster, and you can build a really good career as a freelance or working for lots of different independent companies. And I think that's really changed over the last 10 years, and podcasting has really helped change that.
I think, again, to go back to parallels, but from a different industry in football journalism in about 2009, 2010, you had an awful lot of people from non-traditional backgrounds who had their profiles amplified by social media or blogging or things like that. And suddenly there was more choice out there for the kind of people that you could give great platforms to. And that's been very similar in audio, not just with your popular music stations, but also audio fiction, which I'm fascinated by at the moment. You have 100 years had a sort of logjam of talent outside Radio 4's door, and now all of a sudden with podcasts you have this opportunity for brand new voices, new eclectic weird ideas to come out. It's a fascinating time.
I agree with the room. I mean, we live in a world where a six-year-old who opens toys can make $10 million a year on YouTube. For real. The barrier to get into any kind of communication now is virtually non-existent. The whole world can make a show. So, yeah, it's a very exciting time. And I think it's just a side benefit that because the entry level is so low now that we will automatically be able to hear more diverse voices, which I think is a plus for all of us.
I've spent a lot of time in the last few years talking to students. And it's very disappointing when they come back at you with the old thing about, well, I need to find a job. I need to apply for a job. I need to look in the jobs, you know, columns. It doesn't work like that now because you just make it yourself, don't you?
Yeah, you need to bang on the door. You need to get
or
to...
Or just go in your bedroom and make your own podcast.
Yeah, make something, get in contact with people, get on... I mean, there's a bloody big internet there and most of it's free. Get out there, find email addresses, send me your stuff, make a podcast, send it to me. I'll give it a listen. There's that opportunity to do it now.
So, Gene, from your point of view, and you're, as you said, of a certain age, is that kind of thrilling or a bit weird? Because your career has been about getting employed by somebody... Mm-hmm. Are you starting to think, well, actually, maybe I don't work like that anymore. Maybe what I do is I make my own stuff.
That's absolutely where the industry is at. I mean, Britain has been the same, especially this past year with all of the nationalization of the shows, the same as America has been for a lot of years, which is there are maybe 80% fewer radio jobs now than there was 15 years ago in America. You have to start looking at new media. You have to start looking at different entry points. Yeah, absolutely. That's in my head right now.
Let's just pause for a small advertisement.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Nick Hassel.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
It's the January roundtable from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Dan. We've got Gene Bean Baxter. We've got Ian McIntosh and we've got Brett Spencer here. Gene, Don Imus has never been well known over here, but within the kind of the world of geeky radio people, he was a legend, recently deceased. What did you make of him? Controversial figure.
Very much so. He's a perfect example of how people are not all bad and all good. Many of the things that he said, whether he believed them or not, I don't know, were completely racist and sexist and homophobic and inexcusable in any year. But on the other hand, he raised hundreds of millions of dollars for children's cancer charities. He raised millions of dollars for first responders. He put on a very intelligent political talk show, for which I think he's best known now, his last 20 years of doing that kind of show. And it was especially amplified in the United States when it started being carried on MSNBC so people could watch him. So now he has a national audience. But even before that, I mean, he was on the radio for over 50 years. And when you talk about what came to be known as shock jocks in a derogatory way, he was one of the very first, going all the way back to 1970 in Cleveland. He was doing a show that was very different from the shows of KFRC in San Francisco or WABC in New York, which were essentially morning zoo shows and let's not offend everyone and it's for the whole family. And Don Imus really broke that mold. And for as much as you heard, people in radio certainly have always heard of the bitter war between Howard Stern and Don Imus. I mean, Howard Stern grew up listening to Don Imus. There may not have been a Howard Stern without Don Imus, and I don't think he gets a lot of credit for the work that he did before he became well-known as a place where politicians would go to be interviewed. He was a groundbreaker in many ways even before that.
Some of our broadcasting rules stop that kind of thing before it starts. Do you wish all that was swept away and people could say what they wanted in?
No. No, I think that would be very dangerous. As someone who grew up listening to, you know, the UK versions, I remember Nick Abbott's show on Virgin and him being pulled off the air repeatedly. I was a cleaner at a hospital doing night shifts years ago and listening to James Whale on talk radio. Again, another one who got ripped off the air quite a few times. I don't know that much about Don Imus outside of the obituaries I read in preparation for this, but you could see there were more than a few occasions he'd gone beyond the pale. But I do completely echo the comments that people are nuanced, fractured individuals with good and bad in them.
We've never really embraced shock jockery, though, have we, Brett?
Well, no, because the broadcasting rules sort of mitigate against it, really. Although you have got people like James O'Brien now on LBC who are able to sort of express an opinion, perhaps in a way that broadcasters have not been able to do so before. So I think we've moved slightly closer to it. But certainly, you know, from where we are now following Brexit and a very bruising election, I'm all for a bit more civility on the radio, quite frankly.
That would be a very good thing.
If I can just PS to that, Trevor, that is one of the biggest differences I note between British radio and American radio. America is very committed to its first two amendments of the Constitution. We're very committed to freedom of speech, and it takes a lot for somebody to say you can't say something, even if you're on an FCC-regulated station. And number two, of course, is the Second Amendment about guns, which I know you think America's all crazy about. But those are the bedrocks of the country, and that's why a guy like Don Imus was allowed to do what Don Imus was allowed to do for so long. And I don't necessarily think it's bad. I really don't. I mean, I think if you want an authentic radio, let people be authentic and let the marketplace decide whether there's a place for them on the dial.
That's not a very socialist view, is it?
I mean, look, if people
let the market decide. Though,
I'm saying if advertisers decide, somebody comes on the radio in Britain and does what you say shock jock, which is a term, a very derogatory term that nobody who listens to and enjoys a show would ever refer to that personality as a shock jock. It's only the people who don't like the show that call it a shock jock. But if a person goes on and they say things that offend too many people, there will be complaints to the station and to the advertisers, and that show simply won't stay on the air.
Now, this cuts to an interesting point, I think, which is we do believe in the UK, or at least we operate under a regulated system, whether it's the BBC Trust or it's Ofcom or both. We accept that there are rules, and you as a society don't.
That's right.
Your rule is that there are no rules.
Well, not that there are no rules, but they're not nearly as strict as they are here in Europe.
Do you think that our radio, from what you've heard, would be better if we were less well regulated?
I do. Why silence those voices just because they're controversial or unpopular opinions? Let those people be on the radio and let the marketplace decide whether there's an audience for it.
But will the marketplace always make the right decisions?
Perhaps not. I don't think we know. I think it would be on a case-by-case basis. You know, there may be something that you think is so offensive that it should never be uttered into a microphone, but there may be millions of people who enjoy it as well. Why not make it available to people?
Interesting stuff. 2020, we've arrived. It's happened. What are our hopes and fears for the new decade? Shall we start with Ian?
On the podcast front, I think a number of people have referred to podcasting as being the Wild West. I think there's an element of truth in that. I also think that 2020 will be the year that the Wild West becomes increasingly federalised. The railroads go down. The law takes over. I think it's going to be a very important time for the industry. I think there's going to be more transparency, more visibility, and a lot more trust going into the industry as a whole, which I think is good news for everyone.
And we have got Gene's ideal world here now in audio, haven't we? Because in podcasts, we don't have any regulation.
Yeah, there's a lot of market power in terms of what's said, though I wouldn't want to bend the rules too much. I don't know if anyone's got clear jurisdiction over podcasts at the moment. I know we've had a couple of incidents with things on shows where we've received important-looking letters. Yes, it's going to be quite a time.
I'm interested in what you meant there about it being more federalised. What were you getting at there?
At the moment, we don't really have any cast iron way of knowing what the biggest podcast is. We have an iTunes chart, but no one really knows entirely how that works. And I can tell you our own Totally Scottish Football Show, which is a great show, a great team behind it. But I know how many people that show roughly reaches. And I also know that it was number two of all podcasts on Apple shortly after its launch. Now, it's definitely not the second most listened to podcast in the UK, as excellent as it is. I also know that we have podcasts that will be at the top of the charts shortly after they're released that are way above podcasts that get maybe 10 times as many listens.
But I think that's because the charts, it's a good thing the chart is skewed to new releases in that way, because otherwise I think the top 10 podcasts would never change.
I think it
would always be the same
fresh,
top 10, so it does keep it fresh. But obviously it doesn't then help in terms of being able to monetize things and knowing exactly what downloads you're getting.
And with profile, with advertisers, with reaching new listeners, I think it would be great to have a really visible, either like a Nielsen rating system or pop music charts, something out there so you can actually see very, very transparently what's doing well and what isn't. Because at the moment, I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about the industry.
You know, I was going to bring up the same thing the guys did about the podcast thing. I think the most frustrating thing for anyone who is in our business is exactly what you said, Ian, which is that you just can't tell how many people are listening. And the reason that's so important is because that's been the problem with trying to get advertising on so many podcasts, is because they'll say, well, you tell me you have 5,000, you tell me you have 20,000, whatever it is, but how can I know? How can I prove it? And I think that makes the whole sector so much more profitable if people who buy advertising believe in the product.
Absolutely. Absolutely concur. There are still, when we look at the advertisers on podcasts, it's beginning to change, but it's still, you don't
still a lot of underwear.
Yeah, still a lot of razors and God bless the mattress guys. But you're not seeing, you know, the likes of BMW or mm-hmm. Volkswagen coming in and doing spot adverts on podcasts. There's still a little bit of trepidation as people are going, well, how many people are listening? And that is changing. You have IAB now and IAB2 coming out across most platforms. So you're beginning to dig down. We're certainly starting to see the ability to tell how long people have been listening to the show, whether they drop off. More of that, because as you say, if we have that opportunity to go to advertisers and say, this is what you're getting, this is not just what I'm saying, this is what you're getting, it's good for all of us.
I think all that will change, and we'll have much more robust ways of knowing how many downloads we're getting, and more robust ways of talking to advertisers. I mean, we need to think about the fact that it's taken us, you know, 16 years to get here.
Yes.
I mean, I launched the original podcast for the BBC back in 2004 because I'm that old. And the first week we put Kermode Mayo out, 42 people downloaded it. And we were just ecstatic. So, you know, it's taken 16 years to get where we are. And podcasting has exploded over the last few years. You know, the podcasting gold rush, as it's sometimes referred to. And it's only going to get more impactful.
We have a celebrity product endorsement ourselves now. Here's Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. Yes, I'm here with a script read to tell you all about the fantastic work that CleanFeed do. If you're starting the new year with a new project and you need a way of connecting in great quality with somebody somewhere different to where you are, or using a browser rather than an ISDN line or something like that, then CleanFeed might be the solution you're looking for. It's great for doing OBs, doing interviews for your podcast or your radio show, and maybe co-hosting your show from the other side of the world. CleanFeed's been designed for radio people and for podcasters as well. It's really simple to use and connect in great quality over the web using a browser, and you can even record within the browser as well if you are making a podcast. There's a completely free version. CleanFeed won't cost you anything to get started, just 30 seconds or so to get signed up and having your first go within a few minutes. You can find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. Back to you, Trevor.
Thank you very much, Stuart. Brett, you've got some more thoughts on 2020 before we hear our recommendations.
Yes, I think, you know, June, July, we're going to find out the result of the government's thinking on FM, which Margot James announced, I think, last May at the Radio Festival. We've not heard anything publicly about that, I think, in the last year or so, but clearly that could be impactful for the industry as a whole. And we're going to start hearing lots of content from the Audio Content Fund, which starts drip-feeding through over the next year or so. We've got a couple at BOW, which I think are quite interesting, which is imagine we're doing a series celebrating diversity in theatre around the Olivier Awards, and we're going to have a series of dramas on Jazz FM called Space is the Place, which is about dramas around jazz legends. And then there's things like on Fun Kids, there's going to be a soap opera around the space race in the Irish Sea, which sounds really intriguing. So I think we're going to hear some really exciting content funded by the Audio Content Fund, which we perhaps would not have heard without that fund existing, and there's another round closing soon. So that's only a really good thing for the industry. And I'm quite interested to see what's going to happen with Five Live. Speculation around, is it going to split into Five Live News and Five Live Sport?
Exactly, is it?
And quite exciting to have Heidi Dawson in charge. I mean, there have been four male controllers at Five Live since 1997, so it's great that Heidi's going to be in charge. Really interesting to see what she's going to do with that station.
I haven't mentioned, by the way, that, Ian, that your company, Muddy Knees, which is, of course, as its name suggests, basically around sport, but you've been making the wonderful You're All Dead to Me podcast.
Yeah, we...
Which is a history.
We started out with sport. We're now in a place where our turnover for non-sport shows is rapidly approaching 50%, led by You're Dead to Me, which was my baby, really, for people who didn't do so well at school but suddenly got interested in history afterwards. And it fills in the gaps. You have a stand-up comedian like Sarah Pascoe. You have a the teacher you'd always wanted, like Professor Michael Scott, and then 45 minutes you have a laugh and you learn something along the way. That's been brilliant for us, and we're looking forward to making plenty more of those.
I'm just going to ask you, you may not want to tell me this, but how did you, as the man from Muddy Knees Media, managed to sell a history podcast to the BBC?
We made pilots. We've never had investment outside of my ISA, which my wife was very angry about, setting up the company. We've never taken investment. We have no sugar daddy. We've taken all the revenue from the football shows and we piled it into new stuff. Now, some of that new stuff didn't work, but some of it did. We actually took a gamble and we paid for pilots to be made. The first pilot of You're Dead to Me was terrible. It missed the mark completely. The second one was brilliant, and we took the second one around in the industry, and we were lucky enough that Rhian Roberts at the BBC just got it instantly and actually made it better along the way and signed it up and supported it. And
that's the lesson to all new podcasters, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, go make stuff. Yeah, go do stuff.
Right, let's do our recommendations. Let's start with you, Gene, our celebrity guest. What have you brought with you?
Well, first of all, you don't understand what the word celebrity means, obviously. First of all, friend of the podcast, he's been on before, Larry Gifford, you might remember.
The lovely Larry.
He is a program director with Chorus in Canada. He runs CKNW in Vancouver. He's a lovely man and a good friend. And he, about 3 years ago, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And he has made a podcast about that called When Life Gives You Parkinson's. And it is wonderful. There are so many people around the world who are afflicted with it, and there's so much research being done. It's a hopeful time for them. But you really, it's so authentic and so personal. He talks to his wife, his kid, his doctors, his friends, experts, celebrities, all about Parkinson's. And the episode that I'll direct you to now is the last episode of the first season, where he did a whole episode about the great boxing champion, Muhammad Ali, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's as well. And he interviews his daughter, and he interviews lots of people, including, as you'll hear in this clip, a British radio presenter. Again, here's the clip from When Life Gives You Parkinson's.
When I talk to folks about Muhammad Ali, Michael J. Fox's name comes up quick. That was the case when I chatted with Sky TV sports presenter Dave Clark. Dave is best known today for anchoring darts, but he's covered boxing, football, and all the rest. Dave was first introduced to Parkinson's as a kid.
I was off school ill one day, and I saw a program about Parkinson's. And I thought, my dad's got all those symptoms. And I said to my mum and my brother, I think dad's got Parkinson's. And they said, yes, he has. And that was the end of the conversation. No, it was a long time ago. People thought differently then. You know, I was 11 years old or 10 years old. And we never talked about it.
When he was 17, Dave's dad was in the throes of Parkinson's, which for him included severe depression. It was that year when his dad went into the cold, dark cellar in their West Yorkshire home and took his own life. Dave was confronted with Parkinson's again in 1996 when he was in Atlanta covering the Olympics, when Muhammad Ali surprised the world.
It was hard when I saw him, because no one knew Muhammad Ali was going to light the flame.
And look, it's Muhammad Ali!
So seeing him in the stadium, it brought memories back of my dad.
The former world heavyweight champion.
That's Larry Gifford's When Life Gives You Parkinson's. And it is, I mean, if I didn't know Larry, I wouldn't have even started to listen to it.
Agreed. But I've listened to it also, and
it's wonderful.
It's wonderfully put together, and it's clearly put together by somebody who's an incredibly highly skilled radio professional,
yes.
If that makes sense.
He's such a wonderful writer.
Yeah, and it's a beautifully written program and beautifully put together.
Let's have Ian's first choice.
Well, it's 2020 and US election year, and Wondery have Wicked Game, which is every U.S. election, sort of 45-minute, the story of, behind the scenes. So it's obviously great for a new history buff like myself. As with all of Wondery stuff, it's slickly produced. It's a joy to listen to. And they will be putting out, I think, one a week all the way up to the election. It's a really, really fascinating show.
Here is a clip.
Your Honours, there is a principle on which a particular decision is demanded from this court. Adams points to a framed document hanging on the wall of the courtroom, the Declaration of Independence. That document says every man is endowed by his creator with certain inalienable rights. The right of slavery is utterly incompatible with any theory of human rights, and especially with the rights which the Declaration of Independence proclaims as self-evident truths. The moment you come to the Declaration of Independence that every man has a right to life and liberty, this case is decided. Order, order. Thanks to John Quincy Adams' skill in the courtroom, the West Africans were set free. the Amistad case of 1841 would become a rallying cry for the burgeoning cause of abolition and a dire warning to Southern interests who wanted to safeguard their peculiar institution. The issue of slavery would define the 1844 election and push the country ever closer to the brink of civil war.
That's Wicked Game. You're first, Brett.
Having all talked about how wonderful UK radio is over the US, we're now all picking American audio. I'm not big on going to see live podcast shows as much as I think they're fantastic. And it's great the audience get a chance to see their favourite podcast being recorded. I often find when I go to them after about 10 minutes, it just feels like I'm at work watching people making a radio show. But before Christmas, a good friend of mine took me to the West Wing Weekly, which was, it was the penultimate episode they were recording. It's presented by Joshua Malina and Harishi Herway. And they have an episode for every episode of The West Wing, because they've been recording it since 2016, and they have lots of people that have been on the show. So Bradley Whitford's a regular guest, and Alison Janney, and Aaron Sorkin's been on, et cetera, et cetera. And they recorded the penultimate episode at the Hammersmith Apollo, which holds 3,500 people, and there were loads and loads of people standing at the back. And Joshua Malina said when he first came on stage, he wanted to congratulate those people for finding the least comfortable, most expensive way of listening to a podcast. And they were fantastic. And Bradley Whitford, who played Josh Lyman in the show, was their guest. Joshua Malina was in the show as well. And it was, without doubt, the best live podcast recording I've been to. And the audience was kind of, the atmosphere was kind of electric, but also incredible. They could fill the Hammersmith Apollo with a podcast about a show that has been off air for 14 years. I mean, it's not like Game of Thrones that it's just finished or something.
But I would still vote for Martin Sheen for president if he would run.
Absolutely. And they're recording the final episode next week in LA with Martin Sheen.
Wow.
So there's a huge archive if you haven't listened to it. The live recording from before Christmas is not up yet, but it might be up by the time you listen to this program, if that makes sense.
Live from the Hammersmith Apollo, this is the West Wing Weekly. Woo!
And this is television's Bradley Whitford. Inexplicable three-time Emmy winner, Brad Whitford. And we are here to discuss
episode 19 from season 7. It's called Transition. Oh, excuse me. It's called
Transition.
John Wells said to us in the episode that we put out this week, echoes something that Sam says, which is that at heart, he believes America is a centrist nation and that there are people on the fringes, you know, who are making a lot of noise. But I feel like the Bartlett administration was definitely left of center. And especially in the Sorkin years, you know, the fight was about trying to live up to that. And also, you know, there's the big push and pull in Let Bartlett Be Bartlett between the president and Leo, saying who's the one who's responsible for them being driven to the middle, and that the action that they want to take is actually further left. And so they're going to have this new manifesto.
Well, you see this again in campaigning, where people are, Lawrence O'Donnell makes this point recently after a presidential debate, that all these people are talking as if Congress does not exist.
Right. But so here it's like the idea is that Santos is maybe a little bit to the right of the president. He certainly is more hawkish, we find out.
Yeah.
And so maybe he is more truly a centrist. And so maybe it would be easier for him to govern in a way that aligns with his actual values.
Well, and his life story as the first Hispanic president would give him cover to be more to the right if that was his disposition. I'm not conceding that he would have moved to the right, because I don't think Josh would let it happen.
That's a clip from The West Wing, very well worth following, in my view. Let's go back to Gene Baxter. What's your second clip?
This is not going to be for everyone. This may be for no one among your listeners, but there's a radio show that has been running next year 40 years on KPFA in Berkeley, California, and it is a live, three-hour, freeform audio collage program. They play records, sometimes sped up, sometimes slowed down, sometimes on top of one another. They play clips from movies and documentaries. They put live phone calls on the air, unscreened, and let people talk. And it's all just put in a blender for 3 solid hours. Every week, it's a different thing. Like I said, most people won't enjoy it, but there will be a few out there who will. In fact, the Internet Archive has over 1,000 episodes of this show, on the website, on the Free Internet Archive. So there's a lot there to get into if you like this clip. Again, the show is called Over the Edge. It's brought to you by the art collective that makes records and art and live shows called Negative Land. And it airs in Berkeley on KPFA. And here's a taste of what it sounds like.
The second and next call to you.
The test of an intelligent machine is it's intelligent enough not to reveal its intelligence.
Targeted audience without brain. Bigger targeted audience. Targeted audience without brain. Targeted audience without brain.
Would you give up your standard of living?
Targeted audience without brain.
Would you give up enjoying life?
Targeted audience.
Would you give up your automobile?
But now you're calling us animals.
Targeted audience without brain.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not going to be for everyone, Trevor. I don't see you running with it. But
Well, no, I found it interesting. I mean, the nearest, I think, in my mind, I could get to it was the old Chris Morris shows on Radio 1, Blue Jam, mm-hmm. where you didn't quite know what was coming next. There was always a sense with Chris that the next thing would be something you'd be fired for if you were the station director. But I don't know about whether they do that on this.
It's like a pirate radio broadcast is what it is, where anything and everything goes, and it can be confusing, it can be frustrating, it can be hilarious. It's just, it's hard to explain. Listen to an episode if that sounded at all intriguing to you.
And it's called Over the Edge. Ian McIntosh, your second.
Mentioned briefly before, Blood Ties, another Wanderer podcast. I think the last time I was on, I was talking about Forest 404 and Blackout. I love audio fiction. I love how that medium has really kicked on more than any other medium, I think, in the age of the podcast. The reason that Blood Ties works so well is the standard of the voice acting. There's a lot of really interesting stuff out there at the moment. I've been listening to loads of it. But when you've got two fantastic actors putting together a production of this scale, of this caliber, it really lifts it above the rest. Can't recommend it enough. Just 6 episodes. And brilliantly, they're only 20 minutes long. They're tube length episodes, hardly any characters, there's never any chance of kind of losing the thread of what's going on. They are perfectly made for audio.
Previously on Blood Ties.
Your mom was my connection to Nancy Reyes. Now Nancy, she won't take my calls. She's totally disappeared.
These weren't just affairs, Michael. I've got the news of 14 different women and they all say the same thing.
What is it that they say?
You raped them.
Oh, Jesus Christ, don't say that. That's a little over the top, don't you think?
It's time to get up. I'll be home soon, and we've got a lot more to talk about.
A listener note. This episode contains adult content.
Michael, wake up! I dumped all your pills in the toilet.
What? That's so not funny.
That's Blood Ties, one final choice, and it's Brett Spencer's.
We mentioned the election earlier, which thankfully is behind us. But one of the highlights of the election for me was listening to Emma Barnett on 5 Live, who was, I thought, spectacular during
rigorous.
The campaign. I think the reason she's such a good interviewer and that programme is so good is because unlike a lot of the interviewers that we listen to, she's not really part of that Westminster bubble. She's not sort of hanging around with all the politicians and in the lobby and all of that. So she's kind of slightly at arm's length, which means she's, you know, perhaps not as attached to all those, you know, political things that are going on. And her, as you said, the questioning is rigorous. She doesn't let go. She's not scared of asking questions 3-4 times. She has an interesting little tell when you know she's going to go for a guest, when she says, I think I've understood this, yeah. or I think I've read this properly, at which point, if you're the guest, you're toast. But the ARIA nominations come out next Wednesday, and I would expect her to be one of the front runners for Speech Broadcaster of the Year.
Here's Emma.
There's a Labour candidate called Zara Sultana who's had to apologise for saying she would celebrate the deaths of Tony Blair and Benjamin Netanyahu. Should she be allowed to stand?
I think that needs to be looked at, and I'm sure that it is. And
it is being looked at. What's your opinion?
I don't know the details of it.
Well, I've just told you the detail. That's what she said. You're someone yourself who's been pulled up for previous social media posts, and you're standing.
I think
should she be able to stand?
Sometimes people say things that they're very passionate, and they say things that are wrong. But I don't, you know, I don't think that what she's saying there is necessarily worse than looking down on the people of Grenfell who died in a fire. Well, that's what we've experienced.
So, sorry, we're in a situation of top Trumps. What's worse, talking about people in a tower who should have got out versus celebrating the deaths of two former prime ministers and a current prime minister? Is that really what you're saying?
Well, it's not good, is it? But what I'm saying is that we've got people who say these things. Should they all be banned from standing? Are we only going to allow saints to stand?
Well, I'm asking you a specific. Do you think she should be able to stand for saying she should celebrate the deaths of Tony Blair and Benjamin Netanyahu? You've just got through a selection process to be the candidate here.
I think I'd like to talk to her and see what she was really trying to say. And is she apologising? I don't know. If she's apologising, then I think that would be okay.
That's Emma Barnett on Five Live. Can I just have a quick word about Dolly Parton's America, which is finished? I don't know whether the rest of you have heard this at all. This is the new series from Radiolab's Jad Abumrad. It's the most brilliant podcast thing I've heard in a long time because it's so clever and deep and works on so many different levels. And although it's about Dolly Parton, it's really about America. Highly recommended. That's been the Radio Today roundtable for January. If you're getting this from Audio Boom or anywhere where you can see a picture, you will want to know what Gene Baxter's T-shirt says. So, Gene, do you want to just tell us what all that is?
It was a Christmas gift from a radio friend a few years ago, and it looks like a radio dial that has all of the AM radio stations, most of them clear channel stations from back in the 50s and 60s, up and down the west coast of the United States, starting all the way down in San Diego and then going all the way up to Seattle. So you go through Los Angeles and Ventura County and and Portland, Oregon and San Francisco. I don't know. It's just something that we radio geeks hang on to and enjoy. I'll wear this T-shirt until it wears out.
AM Brett, what can he possibly be talking about?
Can I plug a couple of other things while we're here? I wanted to just get a plug in for Magic at the Musicals, which is the online station we launched just before Christmas, end of November, which is sort of what it says on the tin. It's all the big musical numbers.
Well, if it's what it says on the tin, that's all we need to know about it.
Can I mention one more thing?
Okay.
I'm looking forward to hearing, we're recording this on Tuesday, on Wednesday night, Radio 4's new comedy series called The Skewer, which had a really good pilot back in, I think, October, November.
John Holmes?
Which is being created by John Holmes. And it's an interesting thing because it's about a soundscape of sort of comedy sounds and clips, etc., rather than sort of Radio 4 comedy as is. And we've talked before on this programme about how some of us find Radio 4 comedy a bit difficult.
You mean not funny?
Not funny. But I'm really interested to see what John and the guys working on that show do. The pilot was great, and there's 6 weeks of that starting on Radio 4.
What do you want to plug in?
Totally Football Show. We just moved it to a Monday morning release.
We
always wanted to do this when we started, but given that the entire business was me, my laptop, and whatever coffee shop I was in at the time, it was impossible. We go into the studio on a Sunday night now. After all the football's finished, and we have that show out and ready for your morning commute because it'll be released at about 2 a.m.
Gene, have you got anything to plug, or do you want to just basically direct us to your CV?
Here's what I'll say. I've loved this panel. I'm so excited to see you again, Trevor, to meet Brett, to meet Ian. And I'm just in the market to have lots of lunches and lots of coffees and lots of dinners with anyone in radio. So please email me, bean9@mac.com. I'm just excited to network personally and professionally now that I'm back in London.
Fantastic. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, sir.
That's been the Radio Today Roundtable for January. I think it's my business now to hand over to David Lloyd. David? Radio
Moments. When Radio 2's breakfast show changes hands, it's often at the beginning of the year. It's 27 years this week since the return of this familiar voice.
Do you know, I haven't been awake or up and about this early since God was a boy. The crocodiles are still on the streets. That's Sarah Kennedy. She's a cut-up, isn't she? I mean, imagine getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and dressing for this programme. I mean, she was in the full Valentino fig, the pearl choker, the old Tarara. I tell you what, the standards still obtain here at the old BBC. My heaven, it's good to be back. He lied. Bonsoir, Georges.
Wogan in 1993, and he'd taken over from the chap who began this week in 92.
BBC Radio 2, and this is the breakfast show you've been waiting for. We have a very simple but stimulating menu. First, there is plenty of the music you know, the music of your life. Then there is basic useful information like travel, traffic, sport, weather, and of course the news. You'll start your day entertained and informed. Who could ask for more than that?
And it wasn't big enough, and I wasn't Terry Wogan. That's the trouble. If I had been Terry Wogan, I would still be there. And so I was called up to the office again and told that Terry Wogan wants his programme back. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, it's a choice. And Francis Lyon said, yes, I know, and it's a very difficult one. If Terry Wogan wants to come back, then I'm afraid we're going to take him. And I said, well, look, Francis, if I were you, I would do exactly the same thing.
Brian Hayes beginning his year on Radio 2 Breakfast. Changes to many January's for Radio 1 Breakfast, DLT.
Quack, quack, oops.
Change to Mike Reed 39 years ago.
Somebody's been into my cupboard and stolen my headphones.
I thought you were going to say someone had stolen your whistle. Yeah. Someone's stolen your headphones.
You understand what it's like, don't you? I mean, it's almost like a part of you, isn't it? You know, you get so used to them.
Well, I mean, I wear mine all day long.
Someone's been into my cupboard and had them away.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a really rotten trick, that is.
It is a rotten trick, that. It's like stealing somebody's underpants.
Who would have done something like that? Now, let's have a good think about this, Mr. Reed.
I don't know, but no one will own up. What will happen is they'll just appear.
So you're doing this morning without headphones, then?
Well, I've got a funny little pair, you know, a little antique pair with cobwebs on.
Oh, they suit you.
I hate them. I hate them, I hate them, I hate them.
We've all had that dilemma, haven't we? Not everybody talks about it, though. Mike Reed beginning on Radio 1 Breakfast. And this man began 15 months on that hallowed programme 26 years ago.
Chancellor Cole's in London today for talks with John Major. 7:22. Wipe the sleep from your eyes. Or is it sleep?
I just like the music he plays.
Amazing but true, because you don't know whether to believe it or not.
Yeah, respect Steve Wright.
Steve Wright on Breakfast, briefly. And who's this, starting quietly 16 years ago?
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1.
Chris Moyles, who was to become the longest-serving Radio 1 breakfast jock. And Chris, with his echoes of Blackburn there.
Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1.
Isn't the only presenter to nod to history in an opening link.
Good morning. This, for the very first time, is Capital Radio.
And for the very first time, this is Capital FM.
The start of Capital London in 73 and Capital Yorkshire in 2011. And the start of Radio 4th too, for that matter.
Because this, for the very first time, is Radio 4.
And whilst we're on the topic, have you noticed how many stations in their opening links inadvertently use one of the future brand names to be carried on one of the frequencies?
CBC 221 metres medium wave, the new voice for the capital city of Wales.
1966, Piccadilly Magic, that's what we call our oldies here, you'll get to know us.
Mercury, the heart of the south.
I'm pretty sure there's another example as well, which I've forgotten. Anyway, this week last year, a new national launch for this station.
Good morning, world. It's Monday morning. It's just gone 6 a.m. on the 7th of January 2019. The good times have arrived. My name is Rossi, and this is Greatest Hits Radio, the station that'll play the very best of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And what a way to start with a British icon who was massive across all three of those decades. Our first song, Let's Dance, the legend.
Greatest Hits Radio, beginning from Bauer this week last year. It's not often that those presenting the news end up being in the news in their own programmes, but that's where Carrie Gracie found herself this week 2 years ago.
Good morning. This is Today with Carrie Gracie and John Humphreys. The BBC's China editor, Carrie Gracie, has stepped down from the role in protest at what she called an indefensible pay gap between men and women at the corporation. In an open letter addressed to licence fee payers, Ms. Gracie said the BBC was facing a crisis of trust and accused it of breaking equality law.
And a big story in all the papers, pretty much, the resignation of somebody called Carrie Gracie as the BBC's China editor. It's the main story for The Times, on the front page of Telegraph, The Eye, The Sun, and so on. The Times says her decision reflects the depth of anger felt across the corporation. And, at this point, given that Carrie is
What's
sitting...
What's happening next, John?
Well, indeed.
Where are we going from here?
And given that you are sitting next to me in the studio, perhaps listeners would expect me to do a really tough interview with you about that bomb bombshell letter, but the BBC has rules on impartiality, which mean that presenters can't suddenly turn into interviewees on the programmes they are presenting. However, well, maybe. Anyway, you are going to be doing an interview on Woman's Hour here on Radio 4 at 10 o'clock. But just a very quick thought. You're not allowed... Yeah, well, you know the rules.
We're not doing an interview.
Not doing
but you're going to ask me one question.
The reaction has been quite a big one, hasn't it?
It has. It's been very moving, actually.
The Cary Gracie saga on Radio 4's Today programme. Let's celebrate two great women the radio world has lost. First of all, this week, 2 years ago, Jackie Dixon. Jackie's voice graced so many radio jingles around the world for generations.
I don't like to talk. Hi, my name's Jackie.
Once upon a time.
Jackie was one of an elite group of vocalists who sang for every major jingle production company in Dallas, and she was lovely too.
It's smooth sailing with a highly successful sound of 24-hour solid gold gem AM.
Secondly, Angela Bond died this week, 7 years ago. She was one of Kenny Everett's favourite producers.
Every week I used to go down into the BBC record library, into the archives, and look back for unusual pieces of music that I knew would appeal to Kenny. His eyes would immediately go to this pile on the corner of the desk. You know, it was his material, you know. One of them, I can remember quite clearly, was Benny Goodman's Bark Goes to Town. It goes do 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 and so on. Of course, Kenny just took it and turned it into magic, you know. Oh, thanks, Ange.
Angela also went on to show a very suspicious generation of music programmers just how to use RCS Selector. So with Jeremy Vine taking over his Radio 2 show 17 years ago, now just 10 fewer than JY.
Good afternoon and the warmest of welcomes to the Jeremy Vine show.
Very the nice end of Juice Liverpool 4 years ago.
The last show of Juice Liverpool.
Yeah.
Things are about to get extremely exciting.
The first Mark Forrest networked BBC local radio evening show 7 years ago.
A new show and a new presenter.
And Tommy Vance taking over the BBC chart 38 years ago.
And this is the Top 40 as compiled for the BBC by the British Market Research Bureau.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mick Esso.